Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
So when it comes to a documentary, we should be able to rely on it being based on fact. But where do we start when the waters get muddied with docudrama, where the real events form the basis of the story but with added drama? And how do we draw the line between what's real and what is fiction? Well, TV and popular culture journalist Jen Gannon is here. Good morning, Jen.
Hello.
This is a tricky one now, and it's in the news at the moment because the Series 5 of The Crown was released this week. Loads of controversy around this and how the royal family view it at the moment. A lot of people think that what they see on The Crown is real and historically accurate. Or do they? Do they accept that there's some embellishment there?
I hope they do, because I think sometimes with The Crown, it can send you off to a Google search and you're going, did this, what way did this happen? Mm. How did this happen? I mean, I don't think anybody has taken it at 100% face value, because there is, it does follow a lot of the dramatic tropes, you know, it has to. Like, if anybody is watching the new season, sometimes it's incredibly, like, unintentionally funny. They have the birth scene of Dodi Al-Fayed in this season, and it's like the omen. It's like this fated birth that he is going to disrupt the royal family, and is held up as like this child. It's so strange, the tone it takes. And like, that's the problem, because you're getting it from Peter Morgan's perspective. You know, and as much as he wants to rely on historical fact, we really don't know what the interior mind of the Queen is like over that, you know, course of those years that he's spanning with the Crown. So it is very difficult. And also, I think with the Crown, for all of, you know, the controversy around it and how much the royal family seem to dismiss it or dislike it, it does do them some favours. I mean, if you look at it, like, Dominic West is playing Prince Charles, and a lot of people have said this casting is out of control. And then you have people like,
I think,
you know,
he's great in that role. And I've only watched one episode, but I was really surprised.
The
physicality
is like, it's a compliment. And it, like, something like Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher, or even this season, Johnny Lee Miller, who was like this heartthrob in the 90s playing John Major. Who ever thought that would happen? So when they take liberties, they also take liberties in a good way that, like, accentuates, like, or
and
maybe attracts people to the
John
royal family.
John Major swishy hair.
Oh, I mean, does. Yeah, I mean, he's very different from the grey spitting image figure that we all knew back in the 90s.
But if the royal family are worried about being relevant, this keeps them where they
Definitely.
Want to be.
Millions of viewers worldwide.
We're going to talk about how this compares then to another treatment. This is an Amazon Prime production called Spencer, focusing on Diana.
Now, I loved Spencer. Now, Kristen Stewart, who a lot of people know from Twilight, but she's done a lot of other kind of art house films, like, she was taking on the role of Diana, and it was relatively controversial because the director, Pablo Larraín, he had done a film about Jackie O as well, just called Jackie, and that starred Natalie Portman. And it's really, he wants to do like three films about, like, these women that were vilified, probably, I would say, by, like, you know, the press themselves, and try, and it's more of impressionistic. It's not like realist. Like, I think with The Crown, they try and make it as, you know, realism. They try and strive for that authenticity.
He goes beyond that.
Where with Spencer, it's very dreamlike. It's very about Diana's mental state. And in one part of it, you can see that she's wearing these pearls, and they end up, like, restricting her breathing at a dinner table, and she's eating soup and the pearls are in the soup. It's all very gauzy and kind of dreamlike in that way.
Metaphorical.
Very much so.
So he's done Spencer, Diana, and Jackie, which is Jackie O. The third one then, who's going to do?
Is opera singer Maria Callas, and it's going to star Angelina Jolie. And I'm really excited to see that, because I just think it's all, he does this great line in trying to get to the interior of these women and understand how they are, you know, in the media and how they are in history, but how, what is it behind them, and what is it that makes them maybe so difficult to the outside world? Okay. But
well, the next one, Jen, there was a documentary, first of all, on Netflix called Abducted in Plain Sight. And that gave rise to this, a friend of the family on Now TV. And I think we can take a listen to a clip of this now.
What exactly is your relationship with Robert Birchtold?
Well, he's practically a member of the family.
Good morning, Brobergs.
Good morning, Brother
morning,
B.
Good morning, Jan. It's going to be a great day.
Hey, who do you love the most?
Brother B.
Brother B. Brother B.
So if you watched the documentary and you know the facts, what do you get from the drama?
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are thinking, why does this story in particular need to be made into a drama? But I think Jan Broberg herself, who was the child that was kidnapped as an adult, she's has a role in the production of this drama. And she said what she wants to do is kind of, her parents were deeply criticised, obviously, because of the events in Abducted in Plain Sight. So she is trying to tell the story from the perspective of going, it was the 1970s, they were Mormons, they were such devout Mormons that almost the religious aspect of it kept her parents naive, it kept them innocent, and they let this predator into their lives. And as you can hear from that, it takes this kind of, has a very Stepford Wives or like Brady Bunch or Leave It to Beaver kind of sitcom quality almost to it. And that's the way it does that, is to draw you in as an audience, and you feel as vulnerable as the family does when things start to go awry and when things start to change, and it shatters that kind of all-American image that these, you know, shows have and these families had in the 1970s, where, you know, things were going on underneath the surface that nobody knew on the outside. And I think it's a really interesting way of doing things.
I think it works to
it definitely
do
does.
Documentary and then drama.
Yeah.
The Shrink Next Door, I don't know if you heard that.
Yes.
On app, that was an Apple podcast with all of the real characters. It was a documentary. And then they made it for Apple TV as a drama.
Mm.
And it was just as intriguing. And I had heard both, and I didn't feel like I knew the story enough, you know, that I was bored by the drama, or that I felt, well, they've added bits in here, they've embellished.
Mm.
It just works. You just accept
it, don't
you?
It does. And I think with the characterisation, you can kind of get hooked into it deeper, and then you want to know the motivations behind a lot of things, like what happens.
Now, the next one I won't be watching, I can tell you that. This is Dahmer on Netflix. It raises all sorts of questions about whether any subject is taboo about the serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer, and whether families have the right not to have their story on screen.
Mm, and I think, like, most of the people just of the families of the victims of Dahmer refused to be involved with Ryan Murphy's Netflix drama. And it's been renewed because it's been so successful. It's been renewed for a second and a third season, and I don't understand what they're going to make out of this story. And that worries me, because I think it's a very strange genre, and I do think Dahmer itself is very pulpy. It's quite exploitative. I think the aims of it are noble. You can see that he wants to talk about how the victims were people of colour, they're men of colour, and that the police had a myriad of opportunities to actually apprehend Dahmer, and they let him go. And it's probably because of the community that was involved at the time. And so, but I think the focus is put too much on Dahmer himself as a serial killer.
Look, when you see another season about a serial killer, a real life serial killer coming, you have to ask questions. Now, we can talk about the rights of the real person to a true telling of their lives next, because a lot of people take issue with the depiction of Marilyn Monroe in the movie Blonde. Let's take a clip.
Men grow cold as girls.
I know you're supposed to get used to it.
And we all lose our charm in the end.
But I just can't.
Square cut or pear shape.
I've played Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe. Doing another scene with Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn doesn't exist.
Now, this was based on a book, Jen, this movie Blonde, but the book isn't a biography of Marilyn. I switched it off less than halfway through. I just found it grotesque.
For me, it says more about the director, Andrew Dominik, and what he thinks about women and what he thinks about female stars. It's really problematic because it reduces the Marilyn character, you know, who was very much aligning with Marilyn Monroe, obviously, to nothing more than this symbol of suffering. She's like, you know, Maria Goretti, St. Maria Goretti in her suffering. It never stops. And I think he's had his interviews around the film in itself have been extremely problematic. He said he didn't care for Marilyn's work at all. So it's nothing about her as an actress. It's just about her view through the lens of being victimised and exploited by men.
Mm-hmm.
It's a film about exploitation that manages to exploit Marilyn Monroe. So I found that very upsetting. He doesn't seem to understand her, what made her magical, what drew people to her as an artist, as a performer, as a comedian, as somebody who had her own production company, which was very unheard of female stars, you know, back in those days. And I think it's a slow torture of a woman over 3 hours in beautiful black and white. And I really feel it's a very reductive empty way to view Marilyn Monroe, who was so vivacious and is, you know, so alive in so many people's minds and their personal pop culture history, that I think it's really sad. It's a missed opportunity.
You watched it to the end, did
I
you?
I did, and I was unhappy to the end.
Well, look, it's good that, you know, we can have this conversation about fact or fiction when it comes to these dramatic portrayals, that we can ask these questions. But I think maybe you need to be in possession of the facts so that you can make the judgment yourself.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, with anybody that is famous that you know and you think you know, I don't think you should swallow anything wholesale, because everybody has a point of view. Everybody has their own agenda and opinions. So come at it in three different ways.
Jen, thank you so much. Jen Gannon there. Quick break before news.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.